Hello and welcome to the Volunteer Firefighter Podcast. My name is Ash. I'm joined with two members of my firefighting family. We've got Scott.
Hello.
And we have Todd.
Hello.
And joining us from Fort Worth, Texas, and Training Division, we have Randy Townley. Randy, thanks a lot for coming.
You bet. It's good to be with you tonight.
Yeah, 100%. So, like we always do when we have a guest on, rather than us try to ramble through a little bit about what you're about, why don't you tell us a bit of a history of you and the fire service and what you're up to now?
Oh, good gracious. Okay, so... here's a short version. So I flunked out of college, had no direction. My brother was a firefighter here in our town of Arlington, between Dallas and Fort Worth. And 1984, I was fortunate enough to get hired by the city of Fort Worth Fire Department. Absolutely had no desire to do it until I did it, and it became who I was. So it's unbelievable career. Had a great time, worked with some outstanding folks, and retired 2019 as a lieutenant at Fire Station 17. It was one of our hazmat stations, so we kind of were a well-rounded bunch. But that's the short version, right? So to fill in some gaps, you know, my family always supportive, and I can't imagine doing what I did for all these years without my wife. She was my high school sweetheart. So she's been with me for all these years. Kids grown up doing great. And, I brought a lot of the job home with me. It was just, my coping mechanism. And again, can't imagine how I'd have done it without their support. That's my short version on the, my full-time career. And when I retired, managed to catch on with a wonderful training group called trainingdivision.com. And they're online training. We do EMS training and fire training. And our typical boot camp, what we call boot camp, is firefighters will sign up to get Texas State Commission. They'll do their work online at their own pace. Typically, we give them a year to get the book work taken care of. And then they sign up for a 2-week boot camp with us. So they'll come to our facility and spend 2 weeks with us. We'll teach them the skills, the hands-on stuff that all of us firefighters think are important. And to me, the great thing about our program is we put them in a dorm situation and they live with us, not us, but they live with each other for 2 weeks. And we do our training during the day, 9 to 5. And in the evenings, they get to learn how a real fire hall actually feels. They do everything but get on the fire truck and respond to calls. Everything else they do, they clean the station, study while they're there. They learn how to get along with people that are from all walks of life. And it's truly something that you can't offer in a 3-year course or a, 6-month course at a junior college that, you go during the day and then go home and do your thing. But, I think our thing works, specifically for people that have full-time jobs that can take them a block of 2 weeks of vacation and come see us, and we immerse them quickly. But it's really great. I couldn't do it as long as I've done it without being sold on it. So, that's again, short version. I know I kind of rambled there, but that's, I really love the place, and it's an outstanding program for sure.
Nice. How large is the facility there?
So we actually have several rooms in it that are, we have one big classroom, and then we have several smaller classrooms and an auditorium. We have a kitchen, dining area. We have a truck room. It's 3 bays. So it's good enough size to, we have 2 engines and a big trailer that we carry all of our tools. And then upstairs where the students are, we have room enough for 36 students. So we've got bunk beds that, take you back in your childhood, when you had to sleep with your big brother, you're guilty, right? So But yeah, we've got room for 36, and we could make more if we had a bigger class. But it's a good size building for sure.
Right. Nice.
Yeah, I was just looking on your website, actually, just getting caught up with some of the stuff. And just before we started recording, I mentioned one of my coworkers and friends, Sean Gutkin. And so, yeah, he's looks like he's doing public relations still with you guys. I just don't know if he's doing more of the public relations in the Canadian side because, going back 6 years now, he was working with me back in Kelowna. And he'd be going down to Texas every now and then, doing the stint down there, and then coming back up. But I remember seeing the car. He pulled up in one of the Chargers, I think. And I was like, it's all decked out. I'm like, what the hell? Like, you get to drive the car up here? But it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, well, I probably shouldn't say this, but we have a great owner of the company. Brad's Canadian, and he's a wonderful guy. He supports us 100%, and I think that's the connection between us and Surrey. I think he bought our group in maybe 6 years ago. I'm not quite sure, but he's an outstanding person, so couldn't ask for any more. So I think that's the big connection with your friend Sean. I guess I haven't met, but I'm sure that's how he managed to come down and do what he's doing. So hope he enjoys it as much as we do working for Brad. So,
absolutely. I've heard a lot of great stories about being down there and when he goes down there and trained back then. We've actually sent a few of our guys from our department, they've gone their own will down to Texas and done the course, the academy down there, and they loved it. Like my one buddy, he's a lieutenant with us now. He went down there for it, and he fell in love. Like he wanted to work down there on roofs and because he was saying, he's like, man, my instructors, they got big handlebars, and man, if you screw up, they're on you. Like, yeah, he loved it.
Well, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. And that's what I tell all of our Canadian students that come down, is that, you know, tell me who you know that's been here and give me the experience that they had. And for the most part, they all say, yeah, we enjoyed it. And that's the one thing that to me, if we're not meeting their needs or helping them get to their goal, then we've let them down. And so we try to maintain this one-on-one as much as we can with, you know, let's make sure we're getting them what they're after, right? Because everybody's got different expectations on what they think they're going to get. So we got to get in the middle of it. So I'm glad to hear that the people you know have enjoyed their time. And that's the best selling point we got, right?
Absolutely. And I like how you guys have like the dorms and the way you have it all set up too, because it really plays into building that brotherhood and that fire family aspect of it, right? Like it isn't just a job. Like this is why we're here. It's, you know, going into the kitchen and cleaning and working together and debriefing together and barbecuing and having family functions. And, you know, that just it lays the framework of where the fire service really is in the real world outside of the academy, right?
I agree. I do agree. Yeah.
Cause I think a lot of the fire academies are just, here's a skill, here's your, you know, fill out your tests, and then you're done. And yeah, they miss that whole, the camaraderie idea.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you say your dorms can fit 30 plus people. Is that an average size of a class, or like what is kind of your average size of enrollment per 2 week session?
So when I started 2019, we were putting anywhere from 28 to 32 in the group. So we had a pretty good year. Well, once the virus hit, once the COVID thing hit, everything shut down, right? And so obviously being in Texas, we didn't adhere as much to the, hey, you got to wear the mask all the time stuff. And it broke our heart that the Canadians that were coming down had so many hoops they had to jump through. The point of that was our classes went really small because there were so many people that weren't willing to fight that battle. So for that, say 6 months after we started the COVID thing, that we were running anywhere from 14 to 18, which was a small class for us. And that's, you know, that's great for a lot of instruction or a lot of one-on-one time, but it's not, and you guys know this, you want to practice with as many as you're going to work with, right? So let's get you the experience of a three-person engine company or four, whatever, you know, whatever you're going to do. And with a smaller class, it was really kind of hard to do like a full scenario where we have one crew going in and attacking the fire, one doing search, one setting ladder outside, one and small groups. It was kind of hard to do that. So that being said, now fast forward to now, we are, I think this is maybe our eighth class this year that we've got going in. We've got 21 in the class, and that's the smallest one we've had this year. So, and it's, you know, they submit for what their 2 week block they want to get. So you can't account for who's picking what. We had a class of 30 just two classes ago. So we seem to be filling them in, but that's kind of our average is say, let's say 24 is an average. And that's a good six right. engine companies, four in the each engine. So works for it.
Nice. And how many instructors are generally on at any given class?
So, you know, we start our week with, you know, hose. First day is hose. So we teach them how to roll hose, deploy hose, load them on the truck. Typically, we'll have two or three instructors for that day. And so each successive specific item day that we teach, we'll have three instructors. We may have a fourth if whatever we're doing is going to be labor intensive. Like we do on Monday, the first Monday, we do what we call a consumption drill. And we put them in their gear, train them on the air pack, and then we put them through a kind of an obstacle course, but it's just to get them used to breathing the air and running out of air in the tank. And when we do that, we want an extra instructor to make sure that we're coordinating everything because there's a lot of moving parts on that day. So specifically today was our first burn day. So if you look like I'm a little red, it's because I was out in the sun all day and I got to remember this. We were 37 degrees down here. Celsius, right? So we, you know, that's hot, right? Yeah. So I told my Canadian friends I'd tell you all that. So anyway, we had 12 instructors today. So we put one on each engine company, and then we have a group of stokers that light the fires and move in and out. So on a good day, 12 is good for us, right? So again, that's kind of our average.
So with your live fire, it's all you're using pallets and hay, or is there a gas, or is it mix?
So we have a two-story building that's a hayed out block building, and we can burn hay. We don't burn, you know, pallets or any furniture because of the other stuff it puts off. But the hay, we can get the hay burning as hot as you want. But we're one of the only facilities around that can still burn the Class A material. So Fort Worth, where I retired from, our building was all natural gas fed. Where, you know, that was what we got to do. And if we burned in a Class A building, we burned Excelsior, which is really a lot of hay that just smokes away to ash, you know. So it, no offense, right? You know, but anyway. That's what it ends up. Sorry, that wasn't as funny as I thought, I guess. But anyway, so in our building, our facility now, we do burn hay, and it burns as hot, again, as hot as you want it. And they get some good smoke and they get some good fire. So,
yeah, one of our, one of the guys that just came back from down there a little while ago, he said, your building was pretty dark inside. Wow. A few times they were like, I'll get it a ram, which is awesome. Yeah, because sometimes you get those, right. Like those pallet fires, or they're super clean burn, and they don't get the full. They're like, oh yeah, every fire is going to be like this. No,
no, they get a good feel for not being able to see what they need to see. So,
yeah.
And by the way, he's a good kid. the one you're talking about. Really good kid. I enjoyed having him, and he had the fire, you know, the desire, and we don't have that in everyone. So y'all got a good one there. Just he just needs some seasoning, right? So yeah, good boy.
Yeah, he's racing me most days of the hall. So
good.
Yeah, definitely eager and, you know, willing to learn, willing to work. No shying away from work, which is great. I'd say in that age group, that's not always the most common trait to have. So, yeah, like you say, just needs that seasoning, and that all comes in time.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Like we're doing, like all of our guys, we do in-house 10-on-1 training, which is a great basic skill, but you need so much extra on top of that, getting into that realistic burn building scenario and doing more these like high fidelity sims and stuff that we talk about, because it's just not the same. Like you give everybody the basics and they come out of it still just stunned.
Sure. Right?
Like, yeah, they need that. Then they need that little bit more mentorship, pull them aside and start doing those high fidelity sims, right? Get them into a good burn building. And like you said, make sure it actually smokes up nice so they can feel the heat and trust their gear, trust everything. Mm-hmm. So hearing that you guys have such a good building to work in down there is fantastic, because that's the realism of the job, right? Like, you know, you watch some of these training videos and stuff and they don't have it as smoky as it realistically is, right?
Right.
And everybody thinks, oh, well, we've talked about it in the classroom. I've seen PowerPoints. We've done some skills through the fire hall for searches or whatever. And then you go into maybe a gas building. The gas building's
clean burning.
Not my favorite. It's just not realistic. It takes so much more time to get those guys seasoned. But
I agree.
Do you guys do a number of...
Go ahead. I was just going to say,
do you guys do a number of... I'll let you talk. I think we got the delay, so go ahead.
Listen, I just wanted to finish up on the natural gas comment. I did not appreciate those training fires just for the reason that it wasn't real world for us. And you know, every instructor that we had back then would say, well, this helps us get you in and out faster. Well, that to me wasn't the point. Right. The point is get us the feel for what we're going to really see. So you got to meet, again, I mentioned it before, you got to meet the expectations of what we think the job really is. So, and that's, you don't get that with that clean burning natural gas fires. All right, go ahead.
Right. Do you guys in your 2 weeks, do you guys do a lot of scenarios, or is it mainly like skill-based stuff? I didn't really talk to you about like, yeah. No.
So the state of Texas, in given their certification, they require that we test the students on 7 specific skills, and they draw them randomly for us over the course of the class. So we start out teaching every potential skill that they could have, every one that they could be tested on. So we teach those specifically, I'll say, tying knots, right? So we teach them to tie all the knots that the state would expect them to do. And then we may throw at the end of the day a scenario where they have to set a ladder and then tie a knot, a clove hitch to, you know, keep it to the building so it won't move. And then we'll make them climb it. So some subjects you can't really give them any more than that, because, you know, we can't throw them over the end of the pond and have them tie rescue tension down. Pull each other out. So it's not that much, but we teach them the skills that the state expects us to. And then when we get to our live burn days, then we will, you know, throw them at them. Okay. Here you are, tie a knot that, you know, to support your, you know, hoist that ladder or hoist the axe or whatever else. So we do have a couple of days that we have a ventilation day where we actually put a chainsaw in their hand and let them cut the hole in the roof. To me, that's one of the best ones we do in throwing ladders, because, I mean, you never can throw enough ladders to get the feel for how that's really going to be. So So as far as scenario based, I guess that was your question. We really don't do that until we get to our two burn days specifically. So,
right. You've listened to us before. The question I always ask when we have the Americans on is a roof vent versus PPV. Why do you think there's such a difference? Because we're here, we don't go on the roof, and we find you guys always go on the roof. So it's like this difference.
Okay, man, that's great. So, I'm going to get specific with you on my experience with Fort Worth. When I went through training, we got on the roof with an axe, and that was it. Cut a hole in the roof with an axe, and I worked for a chief. We were a single engine company. We would answer every fire around us, obviously. The chief that I had in our district at the time, he wanted us on the roof, even though we weren't the truck company, because he knew he could count on us to do it. So we fell in love with the getting on the roof and really figuring it. And one of the main things to me was we want to make sure we spot that hole in the best place. And there's a little technique to figuring that out, right? So, and also our houses in Fort Worth, where I worked, were all old. So they were going to hold the fire more. And we knew the roof wasn't going to collapse on us because they were 2x8 beams, you know, or rafters holding the roof up. So we knew we could have had plenty of time. So when the lightweight construction boom started in the late 80s, everybody's saying, well, we can't put you on the roof now. So on that note, we had another chief and a firefighter in our department that they were on the leading edge of the PPV, you know, everybody's going to have a fan and carry a fan. You're going to set at the front door when you go in, and that's all. So there was a faction of us in Fort Worth that bucked that trend. And we said, we are not going to set your fan. We're going to go on the roof if we have to. So here's the finish to this one. And I'm sorry to go so long, but when I retired, we had about half of the department of 900 people that said, okay, we're not going to get on a roof. And the other half was saying, we're still going to get on the roof. So you can't imagine how many fires we made where we got guys on the roof cutting a hole and someone pulls up in their chief's car and is hollering, get off that roof. So I know I went a long way around to answer that, but I think the times changed a little bit where people thought you should not be on a roof because they're all lightweight construction. And that's not the truth. And that's, again, that's one thing we teach our class is you got to read your house, you know, read your structure. If it's an old one, it's safe to make the assumption that it had dimensional lumber in it and it's going to hold you for a while. So, you know, I hope that answered your question, but, you know, that's my opinion.
Yeah. And I think that was one of the things we came up with last time when we talked to, who was it? Out east. Oh, we haven't done that one yet. We haven't broadcast one that one yet. Right. We asked the same question, and he was from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And he was talking about
actually live now.
Yeah. So we were talking about how older structures have the heavier timber, and you can stay on the roof longer, and maybe that's why out in the west we have newer homes, like the lightweight construction. And maybe that's why we just never really embraced the roof work as much because of that lightweight construction. And it's always been kind of, I don't think ever since you and I started, like it's always kind of been that fan work.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I remember going on the roof a fair amount when I first kind of started, like 96 to 2000, we did a bunch of it. But then the fans too, we started getting into that and started doing more of the positive pressure attack stuff. But then, it seemed like there wasn't, again, being a small volunteer department, there wasn't a whole lot of education passed with it. So guys were turning the fan in, but they weren't, you know, correcting the flow path, you know, making sure that we had good flow path and this and that. But then we went to the phase where, no, it's always, you know, these quick attacks of setting up your fan and making the push. That worked really well. But looking back at all those fires, I feel that work well just because of the size of the fire, the location of the fire, and the type of structure it was in.
Yeah.
You know, versus then we had a big condo one number of years back. Mm-hmm. We were up on the roof doing a trench cut, you know, because that was the best move for that fire and that building. So I feel like we're getting away from the, you know, never go on the roof to just make sure you know what the fuck you're doing. Yeah. And if you have to, you have to. And if not, well, there's other ways of doing it.
Yeah, like you say, qualify the structure, right? Mm-hmm. There's science behind both, and you can't argue it. So, like we always preach, the always and nevers in the fire service are very few and far between. Like basically,
never
river rescue and never. So, to have people that are so dead set against going on the roof is like, I mean, we're open to it. In our area, we have a lot of rule, and it's a lot of older construction. And like we roll an engine quite quickly here. We'll probably be rolling within 3 to 4 minutes of the tones dropping, and we're all paid on call. So that's, you know, people running to the hall, getting geared up, and leaving. But to the edge of our area, it can take 20 plus minutes. So even with the older construction, with the new more synthetic material inside, our percentage of self-venting fires by the time you get to the outskirts of our area is quite high.
Yeah.
You know, however, we did catch just recently, we have caught a couple calls right in our town area, and you can catch those room and contents fires quick, where you can either make that fan and then make that push. If it's working a little bit more, maybe there is a chance to get up on that roof. I'm not saying that I'm ever going to be against it. But again, it's back to that always and never. And it should mostly be never think that way. Not always go to the one tactic. Like keep that toolbox open. Yep. And, you know, qualify the structure.
Mm. Hey, the other
absolutely
one, too.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, the other one in just in our community, it's a very kind of Spanish style town for a lot of it. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of tile roofs. So that would be a no-go for us, right? Just because it wasn't safe. Shit's breaking and falling, you're sliding. So that was our no-go for those roofs.
Yeah.
And then metal roof.
And then the metal roofs too, right? So, yeah, I think, again, knowing your structures and stuff, that played a lot into it just for our community.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. There's some differences in tactics that I can't argue with. I agree 100% that there's not always a always and there's not always a never. So that's, I agree. And tile roofs, for example, yeah, we had multiple apartment complexes around here with tile roofs that were 3 stories up. So, you know, mm-hmm. we got to have an aerial to set someone on that roof. So that was one of those examples where we wouldn't. We'd be fighting it from underneath, doing the best we could, right? So that's
and that's one thing that we really lean on. We are really blessed to have a pretty big training facility here. We've got 3.5, if you will, burn/search buildings that we utilize. This is actually right across the airport here. And we have a lot of other communities that come and train with us. And one of the biggest things that we always try to relate to them is this isn't the way to do it. This is one way. This is a way that we have found works for us in our community with the tools and the people that we have that we are going to be responding with. But you can take whatever you want from what we're about to show you guys today and take that back home and then mold that into what works for you. So it just builds on that always and never. Like take all these skill sets and take pieces of it. You know, there's safety factors that are built into every training scenario. But if you can take a couple pieces of everything and go back and make it work for you, we find that's, you know, obviously the best for whoever it is.
Absolutely. Yep.
I think the other question we always ask is a smooth bore combination.
Yeah, we were combination fog nozzles my whole career, so I would have to say that's where I lean. I don't mind the smooth bore. I think it's pretty cool. You can get a great stream with less pressure, so you obviously can maneuver your hose. That's definitely one of the biggest factors to me is why you would choose that over something else. So just what I was raised with was the combo fog nozzle, you know, the old L cart that would spray, give you everything you wanted. So, but I don't abhor the smooth bore. Sorry, I didn't mean to rhyme that one. So, yeah.
That's good. Yeah, no, we actually run both. We were the combo nozzle for forever. And we ended up moving to a smooth bore for our 2.5 quick attack line, just to get that large volume of water out on the fire quickly. And now we're playing with, we have two pre-connect Minutemen coming off of both of our first two engines that we have here. And we're playing with one combi on one side and a smooth bore on the other. So you have options.
I think that's great. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I know for us, same thing. We're just running our smooth bore on our 2.5 blitz line. And then everything else is combination other than our high rise packs. We have a smooth bore on our high rise. And I feel like that's probably going to stay for now.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still pumping the guys through just to make sure they know how to deploy proper hose loads so you don't have a rat's nest.
Yeah.
So we don't want to mix things up too much.
I mean, I think the hardest thing for us when we went to that smooth bore, and it's still to this day sometimes, is remembering that pressure doesn't need to be at that combination nozzle. So, you know, sometimes the driver gets up there and he's like, cranks it to 120 or whatever. Yeah, so we're putting back. We're putting a big sticker on there. This is the best on the side.
Yeah, that's
I find too is because in our departments you don't know who you're getting as your operator sometimes, right? So you know you might have somebody who hasn't done it for a little while, still very competent, but you know you tend to forget. So we have a little cheat sheet sticker on the side of it as well with the flow pressures. Yeah.
That's good.
Just give me that little 2 a.m. nudge, right?
Agreed.
You don't forget.
Yeah, I mean that, and that is kind of the beauty and whatever the negative. Like, there's so many positives to the paid on call service where you get people from every walk of life that come in, and everybody brings something particular, like their own set of skills from their own life that, you know, can build and make that service better. But maybe the downside is, you know, today maybe Scott's running pump, but tomorrow I'm going to run pump, and then the next day Todd's driving. So it's not the repetitive position that a lot of the, career guys get, where you get your, you know, driver, chauffeur, that's what they do day in and day out, and they have that pump panel dialed. Where all of our people come in, they get the training, but they might only run one fire a year where they're on the pump panel. So it is like Todd says, like, you know, you got to ingrain that into their, you know, muscle memory. So, okay, we're running the 2.5. I only need to run, you know, 65 to 75 PSI. Uh-huh. Where now on the next line over, you're running 120. Because they got 5 lengths out, and you want to make sure you're still running over 100 at the tip. So it's just that repetitiveness that we might not always get. So you have to hammer that out in training, so that muscle memory. And then even if you don't have that, a couple laid outs, you know, decals or to really say, hey, this is where you should be living.
Agreed. Yep.
back to the training division. What is the percentage of people that have firefighting experience to people right off the street, do you figure? Like, is it mostly firefighter guys that are paid on call that want to be full-time, or?
You know, it's kind of strange that the Texans that we get that come to the school, they typically have some kind of experience. A department has hired them contingently, you know, we'll give you what we get, you know, you get a chance, you get your stuff. The Canadians, which is a big part of our group, they're almost kind of half and half, where I hope I'm not breaking their trust, but we get a lot that they're in the trades. Is that the term y'all use? So they're in it, you know, carpenters or electricians or pipe fitters, and they're just done with the job. They have no fire experience, and they're not even a volunteer anywhere, so they don't get that. They're just fresh in the door. And then we get the groups that are, you know, they're volunteer, they're paid on call somewhere, that are trying to get the leg up, you know, to get a career job somewhere. And it really seems to work. You would think that the ones that have no experience are behind, and that's not necessarily the case, because it seems like the veterans, and I'll use that term because they've been fighting fire on some level, or they've been training on some level before they get to us, that they want to all get in there and mix it up and be a group and help each other out. So, you know, I guess to answer your question, maybe 50-50, right, from the ones that aren't from Texas. So that's, you know, and on that note, so the Texans that show up, I'm harder on them, because I tell them the odds of my phone ringing from someone in South Texas asking me about them is a whole lot more than a chief in North Vancouver calling me, which did happen, by the way. So I got to quit using that argument, right? Yeah.
Do you find the guys that don't have any experience, like do they learn better because their like cup is kind of empty, or do you find the volunteer guys, do they have like this preconceived, well, I know what I'm doing because this guy taught me, but might not have taught me right.
So, yeah. So here's our fallback. We say you signed up for a course that gave you this study material. So whatever you think we're going to tell you about how we used to do it is great, but the book that you're going to be tested on tells you this. So everyone has that platform that they got to follow to start with. So to get them their test passed on their test, then that's one thing. And the ones that have the fire knowledge, we'll lean on them. And if we get the one in that acts like they know everything because I work for so-and-so, well, we're going to make sure to let them know they don't know everything. So that's part of our job is to break them down a little bit, to open their mind to, right. So, you know, I'll say it again. I think we got a great program that works with a diverse amount of people. So, yeah, I hope that answered your question there.
Yeah,
for sure. I think our firefighter that just got back from you guys there, when he was getting geared up to go down and start his training, you know, he's nervous as shit and, you know, been – you know, cracking the books and, you know, working hard at it. And he's asking us, like, man, like, what should I do? Like, yeah, like, go in there and, you know, say, hey, I've got this experience, which, like, isn't much. Like, he's still, I think, less than 2 years,
sure,
right? Like, so, like, he's just got, like, a taste of it. And we're like, all right, don't pack any fire shirts. Shut your fucking mouth. Right? Like, What's your quote?
Well, I told him because I've taken that law enforcement academy. So I'm like, you want to be the gray man. You don't want to be the worst, but you don't want to be the best. You just want to be in the middle. You want to be that gray guy. And other people, who was that guy? Oh, that guy was all right. Like, just kind of maybe the instructors don't really remember your name, but they kind of know who you are.
Yes.
You know, like if it's something that you've done before, like hose movement, like that's something that guy's had some hands on, you know, hey, maybe that day you relax a bit, like falling back on some of that. But, oh yeah, I've done this. Oh yeah, we've run these calls, blah, blah, blah. All right, come on up front, sir. And all of a sudden you're showing exactly what you don't know yet, right? Like, we don't know everything and we're trying to instruct him. So, I mean, we know a lot of things. But like, we're trying to instruct these guys. And when they're only in for a year at the time, like, they've got just the tip of the iceberg, right? So going down there and acting, and not saying that he did in any way, but going down there and acting like, hey, like, I've got all this experience. Like, not really. You have a little bit, and even at that, like, you maybe done it in the field once, maybe. So just go down, be like Scott says, be that gray man, show up and relax on the days that you have a little bit of experience and really focus on those days that you don't.
Well put. Yep, for sure.
What would you say out of all the kind of the courses that you guys offer and teach, what's kind of your top one that you like?
So the hazmat day has kind of fallen into my lap because of what I did in Fort Worth. And I enjoy that because it's very basic. We don't stretch them a whole lot. So we get a lot of interaction time with them kind of on different subjects. So we can get them the important stuff that they need to know, you know, the non-hazard classes, for example. You know, that's, everybody can get that with just a little bit of repetition. And then we get to break them from, okay, tell me a little bit more about yourself so I can figure out how best to plug in what you need to know. Specifically, I'll ask them, did you play sports when you were growing up? Or what did you do that may have lent yourself to the group aspect or to the team feel, right? So that day specifically for me gives me some time to be able to do that. So, and I mentioned ladders. I love throwing ladders. You know, for some reason, I like them being able to look at the building and figure out, okay, I got a spot right there for, you know, rescue on that second floor, right? So it gives them a little bit more thinking of looking at this structure. And of course, we have a couple of sea crates or, you know, storage containers that are welded together now that we use. And so it's, you know, again, it's something that makes them think a little bit more as opposed to loading hose or throwing hose. You know, we can, you know, you could teach anybody, put the male coupling in and roll it up until it's straight. So that doesn't stretch their mind so much, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we do a lot of that too with our guys, is try and give them the basics and then push it a bit more to make them understand like all the roles and the aspects of the things that we as officers are looking for in the building, because we always talk about, you know, everybody should be aware of safety and roles and responsibilities and rescue and head on the swivel, or just building that situational awareness, because a lot of people come into the fire service and start learning, but situational awareness is a very hard skill to teach. So I think just having that ability to slowly, gently layer on little skills so they can start building, hey, okay, you know what? Yes, my job may be whatever. I might be going in just as on the attack line, but as they're doing their own little size up as they approach, okay, hey, that'd be a good spot to bail out if I need to bail out this window on the second floor. So I know my team behind me is going to have that ladder thrown. And then as well as teaching our guys the RIT skills, is when they're doing their RIT 360s, is identifying those easy outs, you know, softening things, getting things ready to go. And it's like, again, it's just that teaching that situational awareness, like you said, being able to stretch their minds and picture the big picture, even though they have a small task at this point.
I agree.
Do you guys constantly like run, like you have like the 2 week block and then right away the next group comes, or do you guys do a stand down like for a week or something to prep everything again, or how does that work with your guys' schedule?
Can you still hear me? I lost my sound in my pods. Okay, good. Okay. Again, it depends on the schedule. Typically, if we have a holiday coming up, we will take that either 1 week or 2 week block off, just depending. Now, last year we ran 7 classes in a row, so we were 2.5 months every day. So we didn't have that, you know, retooling time. So, but typically on our, like this year, I said, this is, I think our 6th class. I think that's what I said, but so we've had a couple of breaks in between. So again, just depends on the schedule. So.
And then because you obviously don't just teach the, like the boot camp, you teach other things that happens at the training division. Like there's paramedics. So
Yes, we do have some advanced courses that are taught by a different group. So those run all year long, you know, so concurrently they don't have nothing to do with our boot camp class. So anybody can sign up for, you know, advanced instructor three or, you know, inspector three. And then we also have, again, an EMT group that they teach EMR and EMT basic for the state of Texas. So.
No, that's not the same. Like they don't, with the EMTs, they don't put them in like a little ambulance station and watch them, like, let them watch TV and stuff.
Some days my feet are off on the couch.
I think they take them to the hospital and put them in the snack room. You still got those? Y'all got those?
Yeah. Very important to know where the snack room is.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
Do you guys constantly, like, are you guys updating the program regularly, like with the new latest? Or because I noticed that's one of the hardest things, you know, we get these fire manuals and the pictures are from the 90s or 80s, and you're like, okay, well, this is something that we don't do anymore. And then we kind of adjust it or keeping up with the tactics, I guess.
I will say that tool wise, we try to do the best we can. Gear, we got the newest gear. That's one thing that we don't give in on. You know, they got to have that stuff. I will say our air packs are, you know, not the brand newest version, but they're as good as we can get. You know, they don't have the Wi-Fi and the key fob where you sign on and all that stuff, or the heads up display. They just got minimum, but it's, you know, it's as good as we can do and give them the feel for it. So.
Right.
It's not a steel tank.
Absolutely not. No. I don't know.
Yeah, go ahead, Scott. Yeah.
Now, have you guys been touching on any of the NFPA 3000 stuff? So the, like the active shooter, do you guys do any of that? Any touch on any of that? I mean, it's something that's coming up here more. No.
Yeah, we don't do it.
Like, not in boot camp, obviously.
Mm-mm.
Right.
Yeah, that's something that's becoming a bit more of a conversation topic up here in Canada now, mm-hmm. amongst departments, is the Rescue Task Force deployment and how that deploys. Some of our larger cities are definitely actively working, and some have some teams in place. But the rest of the province, we're all rural. Mm. So, you know, Scott's been a big advocate for it, and we're slowly trying to build some framework for that to see how we could roll that out into some small regional ones, maybe in our areas. But
I think there's a definite need for it, no doubt.
Yeah, yeah. It's unfortunate, but there is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, we always say it's one of those things you'd rather be prepared and never need it, but I would hate to be close to an incident and not have the skill set when it's right there in front of us.
I agree.
But I mean, in fact, they probably got an AR-15 in the cab of the truck by the officer, right? Not like us.
Okay. So we did have bulletproof vests. We didn't carry the big guns. They wouldn't let us bring those in, but yeah, we had a minimal amount of protection.
Nice. I guess one question a lot of the chiefs ask, like, why are guys going to Texas? why is it in Texas? Like, where'd that kind of originally come from? Because there seems to be a few different schools there, if I remember correctly.
So we have a college that's South Texas. It's Texas A&M, and they were kind of one of the first colleges that. Or universities, I guess I need to say it properly, that set up a fire program, and they had a big drill field, and there were guys from all over departments in Texas that would go down there and get trained to be instructors through their program and actually teach. And they have a dynamic group even to this day that teaches, but one of the things that kind of changed for them when we had Hurricane Katrina down here, which was the big New Orleans hurricane, and 9/11 when it happened, they created some task force for the state of Texas, just like they did all over the country. And it seems like that when they put those task force together, it pulled a whole lot of those instructors from A&M that were kind of bound together. So it put them in these task force groups. So they kind of started splintering off their training and sending them to other universities in the state. So I think when that happened, it opened up for some of us smaller groups to be able to put together a program that the state would accept. And I'm, again, thankful for the three guys that started this one way back in the early 2000s. They really fought for the online concept, and we've made it work for our end. But as far as, you know, other people coming to Texas, I don't know if it's the heat they love. Obviously not, but I don't think we're any better at fighting fire than anybody else. Honest to goodness, it's just the feeling, I guess. I don't know.
Well, it definitely seems like you get a large amount of Canadians that come down there. So that speaks for itself for the program that you guys have. You know, there's people traveling long distance to take your program. So that's really good to hear and good feedback for everyone. Again, like for my personal experience with a handful of our guys that have gone down there, they had nothing but good things to say. They absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a couple of firefighters here. Obviously the one gentleman that just got back. Uh-huh. We had a new hire, just came on, just got through, that group's, recruitment class. Ty had been down there.
Yeah.
Spoke very, very highly of the program. I think the big thing from like what I gather from people, and you touched on it, is a lot of these people, whether like from Canada, you know, kind of particularly, they don't have the time to go down and sit for months on end in a course because they're working. They have families or jobs or whatever else. So being able to do that online component, you know, really immerse yourself in that. Hopefully most of them are already on a department somewhere. So they're getting that hands-on training and then they can go down there and be immersed for 2 weeks straight and like really get honed in on kind of those basic skills that you need to start off in the fire service. So I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, the quality of the program, the cost to benefit. So if I'm going to save up money or throw it on my credit card or whatever it's going to be, I've got 2 weeks that I'm going to go down and that is my life rather than trying to quit your job or whatever else and then figure out how I can take this multiple month or whatever it is. I don't even know what it is, right? Course up here or anywhere else. So yeah, really, really cool program.
What are the normal ages of your recruits? Is it like younger guys, middle age kind of, or
are we getting older? That's a great question. And I think it's one of those that's, you know, we get all age groups, you know, we've got, and I'll go to this class specifically. We've got a 21 in the class right now. We've got someone that just finished high school thinking this is what they're going to do. And we've got someone that's early 40s. That's looking for that change that I told y'all about, right? So,
lucky me, boys.
No, we're, I'm late 40s.
Oh.
Yeah.
So we do. We get all age ranges. We've had several in their 50s that did not want to be a career firefighter, but the community they lived in needed some help, right? They needed someone else to help them get on the fire truck and protect the community. And that was their calling. And, you know, I lean towards those people more because it shows their desire in it. And they don't have anything to get out of it monetarily, which seems to run the world, but they want to make sure their neighbors are great, which is, man, I admire the heck out of y'all doing what you do. And, I mean, your training is obviously the same stuff I've gone through. So there's no, you know, grace of God, I got what I got, but you guys are doing it for your community. And that's, to me, that's the greatest thing ever.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's, it's one of those jobs, you know, like I know for me and I know for you guys, we've talked about this in the past. Like I don't even look at my, my paychecks when it comes in. It's just something fun to do and give back to your community.
Right. Absolutely.
Did he freeze?
Oh. Oh, no. I think Randy may have froze on us. I don't know if he can still hear us or not. We'll give it a quick moment here and see if he comes back. Oh, there he is.
Where'd we go? I don't know what happened. I guess I shut everything down with that last soliloquy or whatever it was. Sorry.
No, I think everything's all right. I think you were just wrapping up what you were saying there. And then Todd was answering back, and you froze up, but I think the app's going to catch it, so we should be okay.
Okay.
Todd was just putting his application in.
Yeah.
Come on.
Beautiful. Well, hey, is there anything else that you wanted to ask us while we had you on?
Man, you know, I don't really have any questions. I enjoy watching your stuff. And I don't know how I found you originally. You popped up. Maybe I was watching Jason on one of his, or Firefighter Fenton. Y'all got tied in somehow there, and I'm glad you did, because I've enjoyed watching you guys. You know, it's just incredible to me. So no questions, just thanks for, you know, giving us something to look at and enjoy the, you know, y'all station's pretty impressive. And I talked to, and I'm going to say his name, Josiah. I talked to him when he was here about y'all's station setup. And that may have been the first podcast I watched where y'all, you know, walk through the station. And I said, that's just incredible to me. So, yeah, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for letting me be part of that.
Yeah. Thanks a ton for coming on. Thanks for the kind words. You know, it kind of blows our mind every time that we hear something positive back, because we are just three idiots that sit and chat once a week now with the camera. I mean, we chat every day, obviously, but, it definitely blows my mind. We actually just came back from, the BC Chiefs convention up in Penticton a couple weeks back, and we were walking outside checking out some of the fire trucks that were on display there, and someone was like, hey, I love your show. And like we're all looking around like, oh man, is there somebody cool here? it just doesn't seem right. So for whatever reason, we thank you for those words, and everybody else listening, we definitely appreciate it.
Yep.
Yeah, and thanks for rocking our shirt there. Yeah, spread the word, and maybe we'll get some more shirts down to Texas.
Exactly.
You know what? I'm going to put you in, because I wore this one the first night of this class, and I sported it. I said, "Hey, look at this, man! Y'all are living it." So yeah, it's great, high quality. You know, so it was really good. So yeah,
beautiful, awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. An hour flew by. So, again, thank you very much. Randy from Training Division in Texas. Check them out online, trainingdivision.com. Check out their boot camp and all of the other courses that you guys offer.
Thank you so much for that. Absolutely. Thank
all
you.
Right.
Good thanks, to talk Ken. To you.
Thanks, Randy. Thank you.
Scene. Perfect. There it is. So how was that? Good?
It was great. It was fun.
Awesome. Yeah, we definitely appreciate it. I told Josiah that you were the guest tonight, and he's super, super excited to see this. This will probably come out in 2 weeks' time. So he's looking forward to watching it.
Well, good deal.
Yeah, and like we said, we had a new member, Kai. I think she was from Ontario originally.
Mm-hmm.
And she took your course. When was that, a few years ago?
She's back 2 years now, at least. Two years.
Okay.
Yeah.
How's she working out? Good?
Really good. Phenomenal. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think she's, what, a couple months in, and we're like the other day, I'm like, get on first truck. Because we actually had a structure fire, what was that, 2 nights ago?
Yeah.
And actually, it's funny because she spent some time out in Ontario. So in my head, I'm like, she was on a department out there, but it was a very small department. So she's fighting the fire, and afterwards, I'm like, is that your first structure fire with us? She's like, that's my first fire ever. Like, oh, shit. I thought you ran a call center on Ontario. She's like, nope.
Yeah, highly medical there. They did a lot of medical, some road rescue. But yeah, zero on the structure fire side. So she's obviously been inside of our training facility, but that was her first live, live event fire.
Yeah, that's great. Well, good.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, and again, she speaks really, really highly of the program.
Well, yeah, we have three paid chief spots at my hall. So the chief and two deputy chiefs, and my current deputy chief, Ryan. He took your program back in the early 2000s, and he's always preaching going down there. And since then, I think we had five other guys in our department go down and take it.
Nice.
So, and I think there seems still. Now that we're doing in-house 10-1 training, we're not getting the people going down there as much. But yeah. Just before we started, we had a bunch of guys bail and go down there and get it because they want to get hired on to full-time departments as well.
Mm-hmm. So what is Surrey? I was going to ask you this. What does Surrey actually like cover? Do they do live burns and stuff, or is it
Indiana? I think they do, but from what Brad tells us, they're really kind of scaling back. I don't know, again, the dynamics of what they've got going on, but they had a really impressive setup for training. You know, they had, you know, kind of a mini city built up where they could do whatever they wanted, but I don't know again, what the specifics were, as to why they're slowing down.
Mm-hmm. It seems like they still pump a fair amount through down there. Like I'm always following, their stuff, based out of Surrey there on social media and they're popping up lots. It seems like they're doing a really big focus with paramedic school stuff right now, too. Yeah. Because I know, like, we're hiring in the province here, BCHS, we're hiring like crazy. And there's a lot more opportunity for new people to get full-time spots. And so they're really pumping those people through, I think, too.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, I'm sure. What time is it there?
It's 10 o'clock here, 10:09.
Perfect. Well, we won't keep you any later. We appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, gents. Anything we can do for you, just holler. Absolutely. Yeah, we'll do what we can. All right. You. Okay. Thank God you. Bless you.
Thanks.
Cheers, brother.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. Well, big thanks again to Randy from Training Division. Mm-hmm. That was an awesome chat. Really cool to see the work that they're doing down there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, thanks again for coming on. And we're going to jump right into our shout-outs. So, first up, let's chat about Modus. Todd?
Modus, of course, big supporter of them, and they are of us as well. So the claim to fame is the Snagger tool. 104 uses did we come to?
I don't know.
Yeah, so Modus, of course, makes a lot of fantastic products. They're the Snagger tool.
It's laying around everywhere.
Tools everywhere. We've got another tool. We've got our Lloyd entry tool.
Your battery tool. Man, tools everywhere.
All sorts of wedges, mini spanners, glove line product coming out.
Yes. Really excited for that.
With some other products as well, maybe the X line.
Yeah,
we're talking.
Yep.
And actually, we're just talking to Paul today from Modus. The gloves are they had rated them at a level 8. What's it, ANSI? ANSI level 8, which is a cut resistant rating. They're actually at a level 9, so that's the highest cut resistant rating you can get for a glove. So they're very, very nice gloves. We're going to start. I'm probably going to transition soon over them.
Yeah.
Just because they definitely hold up. We've been using them since we got the demo pairs about 2-3 months ago. Using them not for structure fires, but for mop up at fires, for auto X. Basically, the entire seminar ran my gloves. They're awesome.
What I really like about them is just that, you know, the whole fit and finish. So once you start getting up in the rating for the abrasion resistance, you start to lose the dexterity.
Yep.
You know? And I don't find that with them at all. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I've always been in my you know, Monday to Friday job and firefighting. If I don't use it, if I don't like it, I'm not going to pump it. Like, oh yeah, this is good. And I'll say that. But like, I will not pump the shit out of something if I'm not using it. And A, like the snagger tool, it's always coming out. But these gloves, like, it's legit. Like they, the dexterity that you still have with them is amazing. So I'm super pumped to have a set. And like, we've been pushing them with the chief and he's, you know, right on board. And we are going to do a rolling changeover. Yeah. So. Yep. Yeah, I'm pretty excited about that.
Side note, they do fit a little big, so they're usually they're about one size up. So if you're normally extra large, get a large. That's what I wear, and large fits great. Mm-hmm. That's about the only thing.
Yeah, again, I love them as well. I handed a couple more out to some guys on our department, so they're using them.
Nice.
And they're fantastic. I find once you get that initial kind of, they get a little bit wet, and you start wearing them, they fit so nice, like you said.
Yes.
You know, they're not that rigid, stiff finger that, you know, it aches your knuckles after a while, right?
Right.
They're fantastic. So, yeah, so look on Modus for upcoming sales for those. Mm-hmm. I don't know when Paul's going to have them online, but when they do, jump on them because they're a great glove.
Yeah.
So again, Modus DTF5 will get you 5% off.
Perfect. And then stop the bleed.
Yeah, stop the bleed. Bleed you control. The three methods are wound packing, direct pressure, and obviously the tourniquet. If you're going to use a tourniquet, use a good one.
High and tight.
Yeah, high and tight. Yeah, there's a little debate today.
It's not debate. That guy's wrong.
I mean, there was somewhat of a minor debate. You know, in first aid classes, they teach, you know, 2 inches above the injury, and we understand, but when you're dealing with an austere environment or a non-permissive environment, such as an active shooter situation or something like that, high and tight is the easiest way to go, because then you're not trying to screw around with your fingers, trying to adjust. I've obviously spoken to Todd about it, spoken to another former paramedic about it today. We all are in agreement, yeah, high and tight. If you have time later, yeah. If you're in the hospital, yeah, sure, that's what they're going to do, the 2 inches above, but high and tight's easiest, probably best method.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. Stopthebleed.org.ca.australia, whatever the Australian name is.
Australia.
Yeah, EUS. Yeah. Basically anywhere there's a country, which you're in, there's probably gonna be a Stop the Bleed.
Nice.
Because everybody has blood.
They do. Until they don't.
Until they don't.
Nice. And also, we are drinking the Wolf Tree Coffee tonight. So wolftreecoffee.com. We're sipping on the Initial Attack blend, which is our collaboration with them. Check that out. They are shipping now, I believe. Every sale of the Initial Attack blend, $2 gets donated to the Honor House Society, which is an amazing cause down in Vancouver and BC here. They also have the On Ranch, so check them out as well. Wolf Tree, they have a bunch of other blends as well, but buy ours and other blends.
That's right.
And then lastly, we've got Tanner.
Yeah, Tanner Olson, country music out of West Coast Canada, on tour everywhere currently. Doing lots of different shows. Spotify will give you a taste of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Beautiful. And then you have us. We're on the Facebooks, the Instagrams, the YouTubes, and the TikToks. Check us out. Give us a like, share, subscribe. Help us get out in front of more people. We would greatly appreciate that. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right. And we are shipping worldwide.
Worldwide.
Worldwide sales. Yeah. Do the spin.
There we go.
Yeah. So 3 of 4 people wore the shirt tonight. And we are showing that off. But loving the shirt. Fits great. Quality, like we have heard, is top, mm-hmm. top notch.
Straight from Texas.
Coming straight out of Texas. So.
Not the shirt.
Not the shirt.
The quality.
The quality.
Well, not the quality. No.
The recommendation.
The recommendation. Thank you. Yeah, so have a look online. We're pumping that out on our Facebook. I believe there's a new email address that went live on that. Is that correct?
I believe it was DTFF shop.
Okay. I don't know, man. Christ. Check us out.
Salesman.
Yeah. So it's on the internet there. Check that out. I know there's a post that went up. This is the downside of us doing none of our sales or our social media, as we are out. of the information. But yeah, have a look online. It'll direct you to where to purchase. And like I mentioned, we are shipping worldwide now, so that is exciting. Yeah, so have a look there.
Yeah, DTFFstore@gmail.com.
Boom.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll change it on the head of the Facebook stuff right now. Right now, it's still the old one, which will still work if you do that.
Yes.
But for now, yeah, try and send everything to the DTFFstore@gmail.com if you want a shirt.
Perfect. Love it. On that, any more for any more, guys? Nope. Todd?
Thank you. Good night.
Scott?
Good night. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody. As always, stay safe and stay at DTFF.